You're tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Tune in to KBOO the second Friday of every month at 8 p.m. for the KBOO Youth Randomonium. Are you interested in hearing what music real young people listen to? Are you interested in listening to local artists of all ages talk about and play their music? Then you've come to the right place. Tune in to KBOO the second Friday of every month at 8 p.m. for the Youth Randomonium. All things young people, music, thoughts, opinions. Let's get radical. Right here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Hello, you're listening to KBOO, KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, keeping Portland safe and in touch. Especially in these times of isolation, community radio has never been more important, and KBOO needs your help. Due to the pandemic conditions, we've had to cancel our spring membership drive, and instead we're asking listeners to donate on the KBOO website at kboo.fm/give. That's kboo.fm/give. This is Wider Window Poetry, and I am your host, Teal Ansari, bringing you voices you may not have heard from places you may not have been. First, Gary Soto was born in Fresno, California in 1952. He's been a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize and the National Book Award, and he's received a Nation Discovery Award as well as the Levinson Award from Poetry, The Elements of San Joaquin, and it's dedicated to Cesar Chavez. And it's divided into several sections, each of which has sort of a single word title. And the first one is Field. The wind sprays pale dirt into my mouth, the small, almost invisible scars on my hand, the pores in my throat and elbows have taken in a seed of dirt of their own. After a day in the grape fields near Olinda, a fine silt washed by sweat has settled into the lines on my wrists and palms. Already I am becoming the valley, a soil that sprouts nothing for any of us. Wind. A dry wind over the valley peeled mountains grain by grain to small slopes, loose dirt where red ants tunnel. The wind strokes the skulls and spines of cattle to white dust, to nothing. Covers the spiked tracks of beetles, of tumbleweed, of sparrows that peck the ground for insects. Evenings, when I am in the yard weeding, the wind picks up the breath of my armpits like dust, swirls it miles away, and drops it on the ear of a rabid dog. And I take on another life. Wind. When you got up this morning, the sun blazed an hour in the sky. A lizard hid under the curled leaves of manzanita and winked its dark lids. Later the sky grayed, and the cold wind you breathed was moving under your skin and already far from the small hives of your lungs. Stars. At dusk the first stars appear. Not one eager finger points toward them. A little later the stars spread with the night, and an orange moon rises to lead them like a shepherd toward dawn. Sun. In June, the sun is a bonnet of light coming up little by little from behind a skyline of pine. The pastures sway with fiddle neck, tassels of foxtail. At Piedra, a couple fish on the river's edge, their shadows deep against the water. Above, in the stubbled slopes, cows climb down as the heat rises in a mist of blonde locusts returning to the valley. Rain. When autumn rains flatten sycamore leaves, the tiny volcanoes of dirt ants raised around their holes, I should be out of work. My silverware and stack of plates will go unused like the old. My two good slacks will smother under a growth of lint and smell of the old dust that rises when the closet door opens or closes. The skin of my belly will tighten like a belt. There will be no reason for pockets. Harvest. East of the sun's slant in the vineyard that never failed, a wind crossed my face, moving the dust and a portion of my voice a step closer to a new year. The sky went black in the ninth hour of rolling trays. And in the distance, ropes of rain dropped to pull me from the thick harvest that was not mine, fog. If you go to your window, you will notice a fog drifting in. The sun is no stronger than a flashlight. Not all the sweaters hung in closets all summer could soak up this mist. The fog, a mouth nibbling everything to its origin, pomegranate trees, stolen bicycles, a string of lights at a used car lot, a Pontiac with scorched valves. In Fresno, the fog is passing, the young thief prying a window screen, graying my hair that falls and goes unfound, my fingerprints flowing, slowly growing a fur of dust. 100 years from now, there should be no reason to believe I lived. Daybreak. In this moment, when the light starts up in the east and rubs the horizon until it catches fire, we enter the fields to hoe, row after row, among the small flags of onion, waving off the dragonflies that ladder the air. And tears the onions raise do not begin in your eyes, but in ours, in the salt blown from one blister into another. They begin in knowing you will never waken to hear the hour time to a heartbeat, the wind pressing us closer to the ground. When the seasons ends and the onions are unplugged from their sleep, we won't forget what you failed to see. And nothing will heal under the rain's broken fingers. That was Gary Soto. And now I will introduce my guest for this month, Mohammed Badr. He's an Arab American and Palestinian poet and was born in East Jerusalem. Much of his poetry reflects his experience as a first generation immigrant. Mohammed majored in English at Bethlehem University and later studied counseling at Portland State University here in our own city of Portland. And his book, The Traveler, was published in 2011 by Lulu Press. The Traveler spans 25 years of Mohammed's work living in America from 1986 to 2011. And although it is not an autobiography, many of the poems are based on events and instances that happened in or around Mohammed, so they're definitely based in personal experience. Mohammed hopes and dreams for peace and justice, specifically in Israel and Palestine, but also worldwide. He has taken the U.S. as his homeland, but always there's that nagging feeling of wanting to go back home. And you can find some of Mohammed's poetry on Blogger at The Arabian Traveler, at blogspot.com. That's The Arabian Traveler at blogspot.com. You can also find his book for sale there. So please welcome Mohammed.
Thank you, Teal. I appreciate this opportunity. It's wonderful listening to those poems you read.
And we would like to listen to some poems of yours now.
Thank you. I think one of the poems you read started with something about the sun setting, and I thought actually that would be, I'd love to read this one. I wrote this poem, and it's a lot of times you have this yearning for somebody somewhere that you love. It's kind of the unknown. And I wrote this poem a while ago when I first got here. It's called When the Sun Sets. When the sun sets, my shadow disappears. I should have to say that I actually originally wrote this in Arabic, so I'll read it in English, but then I wrote it in a way like you would kind of sing it in a way, so I can read it in Arabic too.
That would be lovely.
When the sun sets, my shadow disappears, and so does yours. My heart travels to the dejected past, to numerous years ago, to decades of isolation and mysticism. When the sun sets, my shadow disappears, and then I live alone, I feel alone, and I can't but think of you. Who are you? I do not know. What is your color? I do not know either. What are you? I also do not know. Something attracts me to you maybe it's the unknown. Or maybe a desire that roams in my heart. I wish I knew who you were. I wish our shadows met. I wish you knew that I searched for you for many years. Until now, you have never come. Will you come, please? The Arabic one, it's when I first came to this country, I was like yearning to all these friends and felt like a great sense of emptiness. And I came to this country in 1986. And so I wrote some of these poems, like I said, you know, since I got here. So this is the Arabic one. It says, in Arabic, it's called عندما تغيب الشمس. عندما تغيب الشمس يختفي ظلي وتختفي يرحل قلبي إلى بعاد إلى بعاد إلى بعاد السنين من أنت لست أدري لست أدري لست أدري ما لونك لست أدري لست أدري لست أدري ما أنت ليت أدري ليت أدري ليت أدري شيء يشدني إليك ربما المجهول ربما المجهول ربما المجهول أو ربما رغبة تجول في خاطري ألا تعلمين أني بحثت عنك عبر السنين وإلى الآن لم تأتي تعالي رجاء تعالي رجاء تعالي رجاء. So that was it. And, you know, to make it more like a song, like I don't like read every line in Arabic, just and so the other thing, so do you want me just to keep reading or I'm not sure?
Yeah, go ahead.
So I originally wrote a lot of things in Arabic and then I translated them. So that's why you see the book will have like some poems in Arabic and some in English. So the book is divided into four chapters, and this is the chapter that's about the man-woman relationship. I grew up in a much more restrictive culture where you did not have much an opportunities to interact with women up until I went to college. And so this one I wrote, I call it My Love. And I'll read it in Arabic and then I'll translate it. حبيبتي أحببتك أحبيني قدستك قدسي رأيتك ملاكا يوم الحشر تدثري عيوبي وتمسحي خطايا السنين حبيبتي أبحث عنك كل صباح أتعثر برائحتك الوردية وأحلم بعيونك العسلية حبيبتي حبيبتي. English one is My Love. I loved you, love me. I sanctified you, sanctify me. I saw you an angel at doomsday, covering my shivering body and absolving my past sins. I looked for you while lost, confused, not knowing my fate. I looked for you in my dreams and in my consciousness. And by all the sentiments and the rosy dreams this universe bestowed upon me. My love, I look for you every morning. I trip over your rosy perfumes and your honey eyes. My love, I loved you, love me. I sanctified you, sanctify me. And I went looking all over the universe and you found me. And who am I but a lunatic, lost, confused, flying like rose petals in autumn, searching for a place and a home, and a woman to hold me and to wipe the sins and the disasters of the time. The next chapter is that I wrote this, like I mentioned, a lot of chapters, is about the what I called it, peace versus war. And as a Palestinian, when you grow up under occupation, I was 3 years with the first war in 1967, and you get to see, as you walk in the streets and you see the physical impact of occupation as a young man or kid, or you're always like thinking of want to fight and want to get freedom. And so this chapter was like kind of the dichotomy between the desire to, you know, revolt, fight, and have peace. So I wrote this poem, it's called A Dream. And I wrote it in English, actually, and I wrote it, it was after the Iraq War. Here it goes this way. I trudged amidst the desert heat, vultures crowded the sky. The heated wind slapped my face, then I couldn't stand the heat, the vultures, and the arid land. Far away, I saw an oasis. I crawled over the sand to lean against a palm tree. In moments, I slumbered and began to dream. I dreamt that all nations knelt to the Creator. All nations recited the peace song together. All nations blended. And colors, ranks, and social statuses ended. False pride disappeared. And white pigeons formed a white flag for peace. The flag held the burdens of all the nations, and the phrase beneath it said, freedom for all and justice forever. I woke up and had to move on. In the mirage, I saw another oasis and another dream. Amidst all, vultures, heat, and wind, I moved on with a desire and a dream, carrying an oasis in my so-called savage heart. Still, I carry a dream. This is called Night Owl, and I wrote this in English, actually. I'm a night owl and a restless soul. Do you hear my cry? Do you see through my soul? I left behind a precious jewel. Amidst a tempest, I lost my jewel. I look back and find nothing. I look back and find destruction. No peace, no happiness. Nothing, nothing but war everywhere. And then during my stay, in Oregon, I remember in the early days in 86, 87, you know, around the time the Intifada was going on, and Palestinians were like, you know, fighting, you know, trying to ask for some freedom. And the news was like showing Palestinians as, you know, thirsty for blood. And only was showing like one side, pretty much, and it was kind of painting the Israeli government as innocent, and that they had to do these killings of Palestinians because the Palestinians were terrorists and what have you. And so the coverage in the newspapers and the news and all over was not really very good. So I wrote this poem, it's called it The News. I'm tired of reading the news. I burnt my paper in my fireplace. When will I hear the good news? The news when the roses can no longer be crushed by the monster? The news when those who have no longer dictate the rules? When will I hear that fire is no longer consuming my Jerusalem? When will I read that justice has come through? Paper boy, don't deliver me the paper today. Your paper has no news for me. I shall mourn and grieve, and if I talk, I shall be brief. I shall dress in black and drink bitter coffee. I shall raise black flags. I shall only speak of my tears, no laughter, no joy, no purple suits for me, no roses for me until the war stops, until freedom reigns in my Jerusalem. Tell the widows to dress in black. Tell the orphans to dress in black. Tell the soldiers to go back. Tell the politicians to stop the attack on the sons and daughters of peace, on the flowers and the roses, on the figs and olive trees, and on the breezy hills of Jerusalem. Peace. Peace. Peace shall come. War shall end. When the vultures leave the hills of Jerusalem, the black flag shall come down, and the infants shall sing with the nightingales. The fear shall subside, and love shall preside on the hills of Jerusalem. I shall be in mourning until the good tidings that Jerusalem is free, and that the vultures have left. And there's a poem here I wrote. It was a little bit of a long poem, but in 1996, I want to say, I went to Jerusalem and I was full of hope. And I think it was a time after the Oslo Agreement, and I thought there will be peace and everybody will be kumbaya with each other. But I went there and I saw that Jerusalem was really, it actually had a very adverse impact on the and my family. They are like working with the tourist industry and helping tourists, and the streets of the old city of Jerusalem were empty. You know, tourists were not going there, and the economy was very bad. So I wrote this one. It's a little bit long. I'll read it and then you can chop it off or cut me off if you like. It's called Palestinian Arab. Apprehensive I feel, I don't know where to start. The rage and anger is locked inside. Driven by passion and crippled by distant emotions, I hide behind my struggle, and I don't know how to come out, how to have the courage to curse the darkness, how to stand up and light a candle, how to tell a story that was told a million times, but never through my tongue, heart, and lips. Where do I start, and how shall I end? Never able to articulate, I go in circles. I, like a tempest, a volcano, a squall, dormant, but beware when it comes out. My friend, I shall tell you my story. I shall unlock my lips and my heart. I shall pour my tears, tears of anger, tears of fear, and tears of isolation and injustice. I was born to a place I cannot call my own. I was born to a place glorious, yet could not hold my soul in tears and would not give me hope. Everything I saw in there made me sick. Paradoxical land, beautiful yet sickening, holy yet sacrilegious, fervent yet dull. My friend, I'm a stranger, a visitor, living in this strange land. However loved and accepted I am, I shall be stranger to the day I die. I still yearn for my motherland. My life, my friend, is colored with years of injustice and fear. Why, I ask? Was I born with a curse? Was my neighbor born to a better God? I hope you get the picture by now. I am the son of misery. They are the sons and daughters of joy and fortune. I am the son of poverty. They are the sons and daughters of wealth and excess. I'm the son of the weak, and they are the sons and daughters of the strong and powerful. I am who the world watches for. They are those who are cared for. Shall I say more, my friend? Did you get my drift? I shall be clear and succinct and spare you the rhetoric. I am the Palestinian, the Arab you forgot and still fear. You equate me with bombs. You hear of me only when CNN brings you to your home. You hear of me only when CNN brings me to your home, disfigured, maladjusted, and thirsty for blood. I'm the Palestinian Arab, the one who you are not sure of. But if you look into my eyes and ask me, I will tell you. No, I'm not a sheik. No, my father does not own an oil well. And no, I don't herd sheep. I do not live in a tent, and I never rode a camel. It's true, I pray to a god called Allah. Yes, I dress differently. Shall that make me less than you? Through the years, you called me names and cut a deep wound in my heart. Today, I ask you to join me and dress my wound. I won't fight or blame you for the damage you have done. I just pray that our wounds may all heal. My friend, I tell you, I know that you have watched me bleeding and left me on the side of the road alone. I tell you that your righteous silence crippled my body and soul. I tell you that your fear of my face and my religion made you blind to see me. I tell you that the way you interpret your holy books put a dagger in my heart. And using the name of God, you wrote my obituary while I'm still alive. My friend, let's forget all that. My friend, let's forget all that and we shall start fresh. Know me as I know myself. I'm good and humble. I love to learn and read. I love people. I love to be loved. I love to have a place to call home. I like to be respected in the airports of the world and in every border. I love to have schools for my children and the job to feed my family. I like to travel in my own country without having to carry my passport around my neck. I like to stroll with my wife and kids in the streets or in the public park without fear and apprehension. I like to. Well, I hope you get the drift, because I'm tired of trying to prove that I am like you. I have similar dreams and desires. Do you get the drift? So that's kind of maybe what I wanted to do from was one last one from this chapter. It's called, perhaps it's a very short one, and it's a desire to have peace. And I've actually tried to turn this into a song with a piano with a friend of mine, and but we had like very bad recording. But and here's how it goes. I'll read it in English and then I'll do the Arabic one. Perhaps we walk together one day. Perhaps we reach the water spring and drink the water of freedom. Perhaps we look up at the sky, blue, clear, and the atmosphere fine. Perhaps we'll have peace one day. The Arabic one goes like this. ربما 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 نسير معا يوما ما ربما ربما نصل إلى النبع ونشرب مياه الحرية ربما 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 ننظر إلى السماء ونراها زرقاء ونراها صافية ربما نجد السلام يوما ما. So that's the, then the book has like a couple other chapters. One chapter is called The Immigrant and the Motherland. And that's, if you talk with a lot of immigrants and refugees, you'll find out that usually the first few years, they're very ecstatic. You know, they're like, they're trying to blend in, learn, you know, be part of the new culture. They feel like they have a lot of hopes and desires, and then later on they start to miss the homeland. And this is the chapter here, and starts with this one short poem, which is like a little bit of true. Like when I came here in '86, it was really tough. You know, I didn't have much money. I had a sponsor that sponsored me to go to college, but and study. But it was very there was not really a lot of money with me. So it's called Cross the Border. Cross the border, cross the border. A voice whispered, sail away, sail away. I crossed the border. Nothing was waiting for me. A couple suitcases, travel document, few dollars, and an optimistic smile. I landed in JFK, I remember, it was like August 4th, 1986. And the immigration officer was like really very suspicious, even though I had a visa. And I had a agency that sponsored me called Good Samaritan Ministries. I was supposed to come here and just be like a lay counselor. So they offered me at the time like $100 a month and room and board. And the immigration officer was just very, she just kept calling, like she kept saying, this guy, he has like $500 on him and he has like this visa, and it was like for like 6 months or a year. And and I came on a tourist visa. That's what So I was very optimistic. I was actually like thinking, okay, I came to the land of the free. And I think I started to argue with her. I said something like, what's the matter? Don't you trust your ambassador? And she looked at me and she said, if you say one more word, I'll send you back to Jerusalem. And I remember just kind of looked at her and had this mortified look. And she's like, what? And I said, oh, I was just trying to say, I'm very sorry, you know. And then once I said that, she let me through. But I had this thought of saying, I'm escaping oppression, I'm escaping occupation. And now I feel like you're oppressing me again here too. But I had to just kind of bite my tongue. Anyway, that's kind of what happened there. So here's another one that I wrote both in English and Arabic, and that's about remembering home. And I think this one was like one of my favorite ones. It's called Ahmed the Arab. And my middle name is Ahmed, but a lot of famous Arabic poets would also use the name Ahmed in their poetry somehow. Like Mahmoud Darwish, you'll find that he has that. And this one says, and I'll read it later in Arabic. Don't ask me about my name and my address, for the night and the stars are my brothers and sisters, and the planets of the world are my companions, and the will of God protects me. I have lost my family and friends, wandering weary in this foreign land. I have asked the night to hold me beneath its wings. And the stars guided me to my eternal garden. I am Ahmed the Arab. I'm looking for a shade in the garden. I'm searching for a home and an address. I'm searching for a friend and a human. And I search for identity and citizenship. And I chase after a passport to justify in it my humanity to those who oppress me. And I have taken from this foreign land a shelter to my children, to my beloved, and to myself. And I wandered far away, stranger in a strange land, burying my pain and sorrow in this huge distance. Don't ask me about my name and my address, for the night is my house, and the stars are my lanterns. And back east, I have a home that calls me every morning. This is the Arabic one now. لا تسألني عن اسمي وعنواني فالليل والنجم إخواني وكواكب الدنيا ترافقني ومشيئة الله ترعاني. فقدت أهلي وخلاني، وهمت في بلاد الغرب أشقاني. سألت الليل، سألت الليل بجناحيه أن يطويني، والنجم أرشدني إلى خلد بستاني. أنا أحمد العربي، أنا أحمد العربي، أبحث عن ظل وبستاني، وأبحث عن بيت وعنواني، وأبحث عن خل وإنساني، وأبحث عن جنسية وهوية، وأطارد خلف جواز السفر لأبرر فيه إنسانيتي لظلامي. واتخذت من الغربة ملجأ لأحبابي وأطفالي وكياني، وهمت غريبا وحيدا أواري في الغربة آلامي وأحزاني. لا تسألني عن اسمي وعنواني، فالليل منزلي والنجم مصباحي، ولي في الشرق منزل يناديني كل صباحي. The final chapter, that I wrote, it's called Utopia versus Morbidity, and it was like when I was 21 when I came to this country, 22, and so I had a lot of ups and downs, you know, like kind of one happy day and then one sad day, and sometimes I feel like I kind of won the lottery and sometimes it just didn't. And then after all that euphoria, you know, you start to have, you know, I always had insomnia, but then, you know, this one's called Lost, and I wrote it both in, I think I started in Arabic, but I translated it, and kind of loved that because it just kind of summed how I felt, you know, the first few years of my life in this country. Don't think me lost. Don't call me from behind the fog. Don't pull me by a thread hanging from the clouds. Don't hold my hands from behind the fog, for I am lost, a vagabond. I sing to the world and the world sings to me. I live my destiny and go my way. Clouds chase me and fog envelops me. And behind the fog, an endless road. I walk and walk, I disappear and disappear, and don't know where is my final destination. The Arabic is called ضائع. لا تحسبني ضائع. لا تناديني من خلف الضباب. لا تشدني بخيط معلق من فوق السحاب. ولا تأخذ بيدي من وراء الضباب، فأنا شارد ومتجول. أناشد الدنيا وتناشدني. أعيش في قدري وأستمر في أمري. سحاب يطاردني وضباب يلفني، وخلف الضباب طريق بلا نهاية. أمشي وأمشي، أختفي وأختفي، ولا أعلم إلى أين المصير. So I think, and then later on, if you need me to read other poems, I can do that. But that's kind of, I took you through like the four kind of chapters, basically, in this book. There is one I wrote that's not in the book that I like maybe to finish with and read. It was, and I probably will maybe read it, just sing it more in Arabic, but it was about an experience I had. I was in Barcelona, and I took my daughter to study Spain with her school, and I was like a chaperone. And I remember I went to this one hotel the first night, and they saw me, the reception there and what have you. And then next night I needed to go buy a toothpaste or toothbrush. And so as I walked in, and it was kind of like 9 p.m., it was not like very late. And as I was walking to the elevator, these folks like started to follow me and asked me like whether I belonged there. And I don't speak a lot of Spanish, but I found myself saying in Spanish, ¿por qué pregunta? Like, why do you ask? And they said like for security, and as if I were like a terrorist or some, you know. And it just triggered me. So I went to my room and wrote this poem. It's called Why Do You Ask? And it should be on my my blog site. In Arabic, it's called Limada Tas'al. And basically, the sum of it is that, why do you ask me? I walked in with my head held high. And basically, don't you know that my forefathers, you know, ruled the world, and I'm a prince, son of a prince. And but then I end it with the fact that for us Arabs, we've just squandered all this treasure that our forefathers gave us through the golden age. You know, they gave us this beautiful, you know, we were great in art and history and math and music, and we we did not really keep that treasure that we're given. So in the end, I kind of blame ourselves for not being good stewards of that treasure. And it's in a way like, unfortunately, the world does not know us nowadays as those kind of genius people, but more so as like people to fear. So the, if you want to like the English one, I can send it to you. That, and I won't read all of it, but parts of it. It's called لماذا تسأل. دخلت الباب رافعا هامتي دون أن أخجل فلماذا تسأل. دخلت الباب رافعا هامتي دون أن أخجل فلماذا تسأل. دمي عربي مروي من ماء زمزم من ماء زمزم من ماء زمزم من ماء زمزم. وإخواني في هذا الكون أكبر وأكثر أكبر وأكثر فلماذا تسأل. والليل والنهار وأسود الغابات تعرفني أنا الليث ينحني لي ويفزع ينحني لي ويفزع فلماذا تسأل. And it's true, actually, I say in it, I'm a prince, son of a prince, but I found out, my dad used to tell me that our great grandfather was the governor of Palestine during the Ottoman rule area. And then I found out that also, just went recently to Palestine, went to Akka, and another great grandfather was the prince, you know, was like the governor in charge of that region. And so in the poem, I say, I'm a prince, son of a prince, why do you ask, you know? Mm-hmm. And I never thought of that. It's like, if you study Jungian stuff, it's a lot of that stuff just comes out. It's like, it's in the collective unconscious. And even the poem I wrote that's called A Dream, where I talk about a desert. Well, I've never been in a desert. I've never been an oasis or really leaning against a palm tree in my life, but it's like these images come to me. I was not thinking like, yeah, my dad told me you're a prince, son of a prince. But as I went to Jerusalem a couple of years ago, I was talking with this gentleman that he said he does like genealogy and he looks at family history. And I told him that and he laughed at me at the time. He says, no, that can't be possible. But then a day later, he actually sent me a picture of the family tree, and for sure it did have, it was like scribbled and handwriting, faded, hard to see, but for sure it had that one of the, in the way back when, I can't remember what year would that be, but anyway, I feel like blessed with that way. My mom had that gift of forecasting or kind of foretelling things, and used to be freaky because she used to dream things and they will happen. But anyhow, so, well, thank you so much. I talked a lot.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you especially for reading some of your poems in Arabic. It's very, very beautiful, both the sung and the spoken. And one of the things that I really like to do in this show is explore different poetic traditions from different cultures and from different languages. And you said that some of your poems you mentioned you wrote first in Arabic and then translated into English, and yes, others you wrote in English and perhaps translated into Arabic. Can you talk a little bit about that experience? Is it different for you composing poetry in English versus in Arabic?
English was the start, I mean, the original one, you mean?
Correct.
Yeah, I think I got to a point now, I've been here like 30 some years, and I got to maybe thinking more, I thought in English, but honestly, because I grew up the first 21 years in Jerusalem listening to Arabic, it still dominates me. Mm-hmm. I feel that I'm able to express myself more and better in Arabic. But I feel like kind of an in-between. So like with some Arabs, you know, they tell me, hey, this poetry is so wonderful. But then some that are veteran Arab writers also can be critical, because like there's a couple of mistakes. Because when I wrote the Arabic, I wrote it on iPhone. I did not have Arabic program in 2011. So there is like a few typos or things that could have been done differently that the keyboard did not have, like how you end like the Aleph Maksura in Arabic, which is a little different than the A. And so that kind of, in some ways I feel like I can do better job in Arabic, but I could be criticized either way. You know, I could, like I said, I've written something in English too, where I thought I was very proud, and then I introduced it to a group of writers who, American writers, and they've also picked at it. So I think in the end, I have to be comfortable with who I am. Arabic seems to be more rhythmic, and it's gonna have more music to it. Mm-hmm. And I've experienced this. A friend of mine hosted a reading in her house and asked me to read both in Arabic and English. And for sure, she and a lot of people said the Arabic was like, captured them. Mm-hmm. And I'm starting to lean to do more and more in Arabic and try to also sing it. And actually, I was pleased because Kim Stafford came and read poetry like last year. I was seeing him, and he started to sing his poetry. And I actually said, hey, hi, you know, because I had translated some of the poetry for William Stafford, for his dad, that I was asked to do a few years ago for the 50th anniversary, I think it was then, for William Stafford. And Kim said, like, yeah, well, that's how poetry was meant to be written. It was meant to be like a song. So I think I'm trying to kind of experiment more with that. And I'm writing a lot more in Arabic now. So there's a few ones that I was trying to find that I wrote. But it makes it really hard to translate, because like mm-hmm. in Arabic it just sounds very rhythmic and musical, and then in English when you translate it, you start to have these long run-on sentences that you don't have in Arabic. You know, for example, you have to say that which of, you know, you know, it's like for me, like in the poem I read with where it says, "Why do you ask?" where I say, "Dami Arabiyun Marwiyun min Ma'i Zamzam," my blood is Arabian, it's quenched by Zamzam water. I mean, where I have to explain what is Zamzam water for people. You know, that's the water you get, you know, when you go to the Hajj. And, you know, so it's mm-hmm. like to somebody who's not of Arabic descent, they're not gonna understand, like, what is this Zamzam, you know? And so there are things like that, that it takes away from the beauty of the poem.
Is it typically, or is it often the case that poetry in Arabic is meant to be sung rather than spoken?
Like I said, there are these critics, and I remember my brother-in-law. He was a teacher, and I read some of this poetry to him, and he was like, "Oh, you did not read the book called Al-Arud, which is like the Arabic poetry has like the, they call them seas, buhur, which is like the meter in rhyme." So. Mm-hmm. So, and when I looked at the roots of it, is a lot of them are like a song. It's like the, it's a rhythm, and in Arabic they go like, you know, mufa'alatun fa'ulun fa'ulun, you know, something like that, where you would say like it's just like, you know, you've got the iambic pentameter that goes like tick tock,
right?
You know, so I think in a way it is. But I think we have probably evolved now where there is also the freestyle poetry, like you see a lot of Nizar Qabbani, for example, or Mahmoud Darwish. They don't necessarily adhere to the C's. And in my poetry, I will flunk if I try to do that, the formal Arabic, you know, the seven kind of formal meters. Now, those were like done kind of a way better than anything I can do. But I, you know, the one thing I've done, there was a turning point in my life where at the beginning you start to imitate, you like, you see like these great poets, and you think like, oh, maybe I could write something like they did. And I learned from, I had a roommate, his name was Muhammad too, he's in Palestine now. And he just taught me to think about the idea and conveying an idea. So I moved from just trying to sound fancy and have just kind of like a rhyme and rhythm that actually didn't have a great meaning to try and paint pictures of what is it that I'm trying to say and what is it that I'm trying to convey. And I think that went a little bit better for me. I don't know if it's less sophisticated than others. You know, like when I read some of my other colleagues' poetry, or when I read like William Stafford, I have to just sit and think so much about what he wrote because it's just full of like so much abstract. But it's just like that style that worked for me is just figuring out an idea to communicate. And I think I discovered that also I had a lot of junk in my life, like a lot of emotional oozing, kind of bad negative experiences in my life. And so a lot of that poetry get tossed and it's not there, you know, like the poetry when you felt jilted, or when somebody left you, or when you had failed love or failed experiences. And I found out that when you write about those in less than a genuine way, it doesn't fly, you know, because you want to say something, but you're trying to hide it and mask it. And I think poetry is kind of not meant to be that way. In the early Arabs would hide something because they loved the woman and put her name in a poem. They did not want her to, you know, be, you know, have a negative consequence. So they disguise it that way, but still it was kind of, you feel the passion in it.
How long have you been writing poetry, Muhammad?
I started, I remember even in high school or even before then, we were asked to write like a prose, I remember. And I remember this one poem that we learned as kids, and it was just very simple one that stuck in my mind, and I tried to emulate things around it. But it was like, look at this tree, how it grew from a seed and how it became green. But in Arabic, it was like, انظر لتلك الشجرة ذات الغصون النظرة. And I think I tried to emulate that a lot. And then with the twinkle, like for example, in the book, you'll see like a twinkle, twinkle, little star, how I wonder what you are. I tried it because living in Palestine under occupation, the only thing I can think of is to say, is it scream, scream, little child, how I wonder what you hide, brilliant, pale, frozen tear in your eyelid, my dear. And that's, that was kind of like one of the start of ones I had. But like I said, there's a lot of poetry that I lost, and it was not really, and sometimes I would write, and I had a roommate, his name is Muhammad Abu Zaid. He's back in Palestine, and he would just crack and laugh because it, although it sounded like the rhythm was fun, it just like it was like it was silly and didn't have a meaning. Like when I traveled, I was given a notice of deportation, in I think in 1989, I was asked to leave. I was given 30 days to leave the country, and so I gathered all my belongings, and I had this Toyota Celica and drove all the way to New Jersey to hide there. I lived there for like 9 months. But I remember I wrote a poem and called it Lam Lam Tu Iddati. That means I gathered my belongings. Well, in Arabic, it just did not sound very, it's just, it sounded like I was saying I'm gathering my toolbox, like my things that I have in my toolbox, like in my shed door. It just, so I remember us laughing and laughing, but I have no idea what happened to that poem. It disappeared.
So we're almost out of time, but I always like to ask my guests one sort of really random question. And so my question for you is, what is a place that you've never been that you really would like to visit? And then tell us why.
It's interesting, talking about now, people may say like you're crazy to say that, but I was watching a program, and there are like, and I can't remember exactly which provinces, but I was, since it's Ramadan, I was just looking at different recipes and food, and I just found out this nice YouTube video that talked about halal food in China. And it was like, there was these provinces in China that are like exclusively Muslim, and they have like these amazing foods. I think there's a Yunnan province and different ones. And I was like, wow, I'd love to go there and see, maybe as, things get better, that would be something to go there and just feel like I can be in a different country, different culture, but yet there's that connection with the other Muslim groups and the halal. And it looked like really amazing, the food they had, and it was like it's all halal. So I was like, wow, that would be kind of fun to try. And I'll have to go back to that YouTube. There's like at least three different provinces that do that, and it was just like and the architecture was like really wonderful to look at. So
well, that sounds like a fascinating adventure. I hope you get the chance to do that someday.
Thank you
Muhammad, and listeners, thank you for listening as always. This is Wider Window Poetry on KBOO FM. Thank you and goodbye.
Okay. You are listening to KBOO Portland.
did to it. Now rap just don't do that.
You are listening to KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM on your Portland dial, KBOO.FM on your everywhere on earth internet dial. Stay safe, stay sane, stay tuned.